Swedish-British journalist, filmmaker, political writer, and author of 5 books, Pelle Nyroff-Taylor, on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Nyroff-Taylor Show. On this Thursday afternoon, we've got 2 guests in the second hour talking about U.S. politics. Joe Hoft is a TNT presenter and hosting the Jason Berman Show this week, actually. He's contributed for many years to the Gateway Pundit, and he'll be on at 20 past talking about the endless ramifications of the election steal of 2020. I think there's a big thing going on in Arizona at the moment. We've then got Jared Felitti, who's a senior counsel at the Lawfare Project, an international non-profit thinking legal think tank, and he's going to talk to us about what's going on with the cases against Trump. There's 2 going on at the moment, one in New York City and Washington, and one in Washington, D.C. And of course, those of us on this side of the aisle are very critical of this kind of lawfare indeed against Trump. But we are based in Europe, and so we're also going to talk a little bit about the upcoming European elections, which is often held up. They come out every 5 years as being just, you know, window dressing for an invisible and opaque power structure based in Brussels. But whatever you can say about it, it's also a chance for Europeans in all countries, 28 member states, to declare their dissatisfaction with the current way things are going. And if you talk to or listen to Viktor Orban, the leader of Hungary, he goes into these European meetings with leaders and he says that they're all set on war, they're all set on mass immigration, and they're all set on this transgender stuff. So these people are completely isolated. They go to their little conferences in Brussels often and then go back to Parliament, and then they seem to have lost touch with reality. So it's time for European publics to give them a dose of reality by voting for anything but the mainstream parties. And that I mean the mainstream parties, the socialists, the liberals, and the conservatives or the Christian Democrats. Do not vote for them. Make your voice heard. But of course, these alternative parties are under attack from the mainstream media, who are part of the same blob. And there's a kind of Washington blob, a London blob, and a Brussels blob, and they all support each other. So on National Public Radio, which is run by a woman who's straight out of the deep state central casting, I'll talk about that in a moment, they've called out Russian influence in the European Parliament. A guy who hasn't been convicted of anything, but is called Kra, his surname. His main crime seems to be that he's a prominent parliamentarian for the AfD party, which is the sort of, I hate to say it, the far right, but basically the only party in Germany that is against war and against immigration and therefore has a lot of blue collar support. But it's also under attack from the mainstream media and the mainstream politicians for expressing forbidden things like a peace deal with Ukraine and a complete halt to the transformative immigration that's happening in Europe. Anyway, so he's now got Russian ties, and he was stopped in a Die Zeit. He was written about in Die Zeit last year when he was stopped by FBI agents on a trip to the US because he had a few thousand euros in cash on him. So this is a kind of guilt by association, guilt by sort of suspicious claims, you know, just creating a bad odor about the guy. Catherine May, the head of the NPR, was once affiliated with US intelligence, had a series of jobs working for NGOs, working on US-backed regime changes. And in 2012, she traveled to a strategic city on the Syria border and Turkey border, became a base for Western-backed opposition to Bashar al-Assad. She worked at the National Democratic Institute, which is a government-funded NGO, which does the sort of things that the CIA used to do, sort of color revolutions, regime change, that sort of thing. And obviously, she's put NPR onto the case of AfD, European parliamentarians with dodgy, so-called dodgy connections. So I guess we haven't heard the last of a supposed Russian influence in the European Parliament. What about American influence? What about Israeli influence? I guess we won't have too many stories about that. Anyways, the other thing in Europe is there's a lot of speculation about what's going to happen to the election of the European Council, Commission president. It usually goes to the to someone from the largest party in the European Parliament, which is the Christian Democrats, the Conservatives, if you like. And currently the Commission president is the most high profile person who's had that post for many years because of the war in Ukraine and a very hawkish stance on it. Ursula von der Leyen, or her nickname is Ursula von der Lügen, which is, that is a liar in German. And the question is, she might get the job again, but there are a lot of people talking up a number of French candidates. It's usually a lock in between those two nations on a lot of European posts. So could it be Thierry Breton, who's the current digital commissioner, and I think it is, who looks rather sort of odd character. But he said he's wanted it, but he's not popular. And we've got Christian Lagarde, who is the head of the IMF, French, English speaking, also a necessity, but she might not want the job because she's already has an important, more important post. So the alternative to Ursula von der Leyen seems to be an East European, which is Klaus Iohannis, who's the current president of Romania. And he's in Western Europe's good books because of his anchoring of Romania into the pro-Western camp after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, unlike Orban and the leaders of Bulgaria and Slovakia. He's also strictly observed EU single market rules, and it's this talk of Romania joining in any eventual military intervention in the Odessa area, which is, of course, quite near the border of Romania. And the Romanians speak a Latinate language, and the French feel a kind of closeness to Romania there, so they might vote for this guy. So anyway, on that very interesting topic, we will move on and talk to Basil Valentine for the latest updates on other news. This is the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show. We'll be back after a quick break.
Your voice heard here.
The government needs to step up and do its job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, Basil, political editor. Any more events going on of the level of excitement that you talked about in our first news analysis?
Well, the crackdowns on protesters are continuing, the latest at Northwestern University, where police are on the scene at the school's encampment at Deering Meadow. Chief of Police Bruce Lewis told students to take down all the tents, and they were all down by 8 a.m. local time, but re-erected minutes later. A police officer announced arrests will be made for trespassing. And as of 9 a.m. local time, a line of protesters was still standing and chanting without physical confrontations from the police. Meanwhile, at Boston, as I said earlier, at least 93 students were arrested, 34 in Austin, so on and so forth. Meanwhile, 18 countries, including the United States, have today released a letter offering an immediate and prolonged Gaza ceasefire in return for the release of hostages. The White House has issued a joint letter signed by the leaders of 18 countries calling for the release of the hostages held by Hamas and offering an immediate and prolonged, that's the exact wording, which is, of course, all important, immediate and prolonged ceasefire in Gaza in return. The letter reads as follows. We call for the immediate release of all hostages held by Hamas in Gaza for over 200 days. These include our own citizens. The fate of the hostages and the civilian population in Gaza, who are protected under international law, is, of course, of international concern. We emphasize that the deal on the table to release the hostages would bring an immediate and prolonged ceasefire in Gaza that would facilitate a surge of additional necessary humanitarian assistance to be delivered throughout Gaza and lead to the credible end of hostilities. Gazans would be able to return to their homes and their lands with preparations beforehand to ensure shelter and humanitarian provisions. You have to dissect the language of things like this very, very carefully. Yeah. But the first thing that struck me is the reference to the civilian population in Gaza being protected under international law. Well, that's been flagrantly disregarded by the Israelis, with the full support of the United States, United Kingdom, Germany, and the rest. And this statement also makes no mention of the thousands of hostages held in Israeli prisons. Originally, if we go back to October the 7th, the whole point of the hostage taking by Hamas, or so they claimed at the time, was to use them as a bargaining chip for the release of their own prisoners. Of course, since then, hundreds of people have been arrested from the West Bank, amongst other places, and detained without charge, many of them tortured, some of them tortured to death.
I just want to ask, I'm These massive demonstrations and students in the United States, which have a sort of very 1960-ish feel about them, are they accompanied by any concrete demands for what Israel should be doing?
Well, they're largely accompanied by demands that the universities that they're all attending divest completely from any kind of formal academic or business relationship with Israel. That's the main. That's the main demand. A lot of them have reciprocal academic arrangements, often sharing professors, invitational undergraduate positions offered to Israelis, as well, of course, as financial investments in Israel-based companies and the receipt of donations from Israelis or from dual citizens. So that's what they're all objecting to. And it would, I don't have access to the full financial and constitutional arrangements of every American university in front of me, but I would imagine it's quite hard to find a major American academic institution that doesn't have at least some links to Israel. So what they're demanding is a complete divorce of American academia from the pariah state in the Middle East.
Well, I mean, of course, the anti-apartheid campaign. I mean, I interviewed the head of the National Security Council. I mean, the spider at the center of the national security web in South Africa in the 1980s. And he was kind of shaking his head because he'd seen it all before. And he basically was kind of shouting out the beginning of the end of Israel as we know it, because it had happened to South Africa. That was his prediction. But of course, there was a big campaign against apartheid investment, and it became more so than the Cold War, I'd say. I'm talking about the 1980s, which took the back seat, because the Soviet Union was kind of collapsing. But apartheid was the big thing. Anti-apartheid, it was a big unifying thing. I remember just up in Trafalgar Square, I was at a boarding school further down the road, there were 24-hour vigils, and every journalist worth his salt went down to South Africa, and there were people putting stickers on oranges or apples from the Cape saying, don't eat these, and raiding supermarkets and pulling things off the shelves. So these are anti-Israeli things. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that kind of campaign is going to gather pace.
Exactly. That's the feeling I get.
Over the next few months.
So, and all this stuff about the deep. Yeah, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, regardless of how many politicians in Washington, Brussels, and elsewhere that Israel owns, they can't stop ordinary people refusing to have anything to do with Israel. But I just want to go back quickly to this letter, which was signed by Argentina, perhaps unsurprisingly, Colombia, a surprise signatory, a whole host of countries, including Spain, who are promising to recognize a Palestinian state. The timing of it, of course, is because Israel appears set to launch its planned ground offensive on Rafah. And people like Tony Blinken and David Cameron have been saying they don't want to see that, while not going quite as far as to call it a red line. I would call it a red dotted line. They realize what a humanitarian catastrophe, as well as a PR disaster, it's going to be, not just for Israel, but for the US and UK, if there are further mass atrocities in Gaza. Hence this apparent last-ditch effort after the collapse of the peace talks to bring about an immediate ceasefire. But of course, what Hamas will be concerned about is the fact that this talks about an immediate and prolonged ceasefire. But, you know, if something is prolonged, that means it still ends one day. You know, that means it's still going to restart. Hostilities will restart. You know,
and the Israelis tend to be true to their word. I mean, it's not as if, in a way, they sort of don't do diplomacy. They do negotiate from power and negotiate from overwhelming responses. You know, it's the Israeli political culture has been like that. But I mean, to everyone's credit, or whatever you want to call it, they did not go hard on Iran. I mean, they have seemed to have some kind of survival instinct. I don't know if it was the enormous pressure from the West to not escalate, or whether their own analysts worked out that the Iranian attack was 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, was actually a signal sent that the Iranians do have the power to do things to Israel, and an escalation we met by counter-escalation. Anyway,
I think regardless of the fact that Israel could ultimately use nuclear weapons and launch even,
but that's still a big step even for the Israelis.
Nevertheless, that's not much use if Tel Aviv has been reduced to rubble.
Exactly. I mean, they've got some survival. Look, the Samson option, much touted. I mean, the madman theory, everyone uses that I'm a madman kind of psychology, and it's part of the game in a way. Although you don't know if it is entirely the game. I mean, if anyone's going to launch nukes, I fear Israel is at the top of that list, even though they, as I said, might hesitate. Anyway, Basil, talk to you more tomorrow. I'm sure I'll follow this very exciting story about the protests.
Well, we're very quickly before I go tonight, I'm sitting in for Patrick Henningsen again, and I've got Dr. Frank Romano joining me. He is one of the lawyers representing Palestine at the International Criminal Court, where it is to be hoped that Karim Khan will soon issue arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu. And he too is in Istanbul waiting to join a ship from the Freedom Flotilla. So that's Dr. Frank Romano tonight at 9 p.m.
9 p.m. European time.
UK time. 10 p.m. Okay. Central European time.
Great. All right, great. Look, good luck with that, and talk to very busy Basil Valentine tomorrow at the same time. Thank you very much, Basil. We're on to our next guest. This is the Pelle Neroff-Taylor Show on TNT News Talk.
TNT's Dirk Pohlman.
Tell us what happened on this during this Congress that you tried to have to take place in Berlin, but you were not really successful because our police intervened and some people from the interior minister cursed them.
It was quite hysterical. You know, this level of rhetorical escalation, and then also politicians in Berlin saying that this should be banned. And in fact, you know, that wouldn't have been legal. There were no legal grounds for a ban. And, but it was clear that if they couldn't ban it, they could still find other ways to prevent it. One of these ways was by freezing our bank account, so freezing Jewish Voices' bank account, because our account was being used to gather the funds for it.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Turn on Alexa and ask her to play
TNT.
Turning on anything else usually requires dinner and conversation, dressing up and brushing your teeth, and I'm already tired.
This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroff-Taylor Show on this Thursday afternoon. Well, there's so much going on in the world right now, and a lot of it is rather depressing. And a lot of us are looking, on both sides of the Atlantic, towards Trump as maybe some kind of savior. And I know that's probably exaggerated, and he's disappointed a lot of his supporters with seeming to go along with this Ukrainian spending bill, which is going to shovel, is it $95 billion towards Israel and Ukraine with nothing for the border. But of course, you can judge sometimes people by the enemies that they gather around them or that they confront, because when you're over the target, you get a lot of flack, as the saying goes. And we are going to talk, and our second guest is going to talk about what's going on in the various lawfare cases against Trump. There's one in Washington and one in New York. Will he walk out unscathed, or will he be going to jail? They've tried everything, the Democrats and the U.S. legal establishment and district attorneys, whatnot. But we're going to talk to Joe Hoft about going back to this topic of the stolen election in 2020, of course, which lost Trump and beagled him in a lot of cases afterwards. And he's still fighting that, even if he wins everything else. Joe Hoft is a world-renowned for his important interviews with the most important figures of the day, and his earth-shattering reporting, backed by his knowledge gained from years of study, his hard work and experience, benefits us all. He's also a presenter on TNT, and this week is hosting the Jason Berman Show. He runs his own website, joehoft.com, and has contributed for over 7 years to the Gateway Pundit website, alongside his brother Jim. He's a frequent guest on numerous TV website and news shows around the world. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Hey, great to be back with you, Pelly. Thanks for having me.
What's so you? We're going to pivot to Arizona, where there's something going on there, but with where they're trying to take out the pro-Trump alternative electors. Have I got that right? Can you give us some more detail on that?
Sure. This was announced yesterday, and thanks for having me again. And it's really appalling as I'm reading this story even earlier. I'm just getting so, you know, frustrated. It's just so outrageous. We talk about with the words communism and fascism are thrown around in the U.S. more and more now, and it's because of actions like this. And so what we have here is in the state of Arizona, a pretty key state. It's been a red state for years. Trump won it by 10% in 2016. As you know, in 2020, Trump barely lost by 10,000 votes after weeks after the election. They finally called it for Joe Biden. Totally outrageous. It was even audited. And as you know, I've done a lot of work in this area. I've written three books on the 2020 election, and I call them the Steel. They're behind me. I've had some great compliments on those books. Received awards on those books, and even Roger Stone this past week said to me, "Joe, your books are going to go down in history because you've laid it out like maybe nobody can." And the reason is my past experience was in auditing and in finance. I oversaw billion-dollar blocks of business. I was doing the same. I was throughout Asia Pacific. Lived in Hong Kong as an executive for 10 years. So I mentioned that because I'm not a novice at this, and I understand fraud, and I understand financials, etc. So what happened in Arizona in 2020 was a travesty, and they eventually did get an audit put in place, and namely in Maricopa County. Maricopa is this county where Phoenix is located. It's about 60% of the vote in Arizona. So wherever Maricopa goes, pretty much the state goes. The rest of the state was pretty much for Trump, but Maricopa had this funny reporting. And so there was an audit that was performed, and a day before the audit started, all the IT files were erased from the systems in Arizona, and which is a crime. You're supposed to keep all election data, including electronic data, for 2 years. That's the U.S. federal law, and yet these items were erased. And then when they started getting to the paper ballots in that audit, they were all shipped over to this Coliseum, where they were going to do it all under the spotlight. But what these guys that were on the floor told me later was that every single box and every single pallet, there was like 50 pallets of ballots, about 4 million in Maricopa County, 4 million votes and 50 pallets. And about, and so I don't know how many, maybe 100 or more boxes per pallet. They went through the first 13 boxes, which happened to be about 20 to 25% of all the votes. Every single box on every single pallet had been opened. The seals were broke. Now, being an auditor and a former bank auditor, I would have been done. I would have been, okay, we cannot rely on the information we have here because the seals are broken. So we know that the 2020 election was a massive tragedy. Even the audit itself was a mess. In 2022, it was even worse. And Carrie Lake and some others were running for statewide offices, and their elections, I believe, were absolutely stolen, just like Trump's, but even more obvious. On election day, people were told, don't send in mail-in ballots, because these people behind the scenes, the crooks, the criminals, are determining how many ballots came in so they could figure out how many ballots to manufacture on election day. So don't send in your ballot, come in on election day. So what happens, all these people show up in Phoenix on election day and the machines are broke. So ironically, they wouldn't work. The ballots wouldn't feed through them. So what they said is just throw your ballot over here in a box, and there was no chain of custody. And at the end of the day, this attorney general won by 200 votes, really, out of like 2 or 4 million votes total. She wins by just barely 200 votes in this outrageous election. And now she's the attorney general, and now she's turned around and she's suing people, indicted people for challenging the 2020 and 2022 elections. You just can't make this stuff up. So I don't know what sounds more fascist than that.
Can I just say, but this attorney general won by 200 votes. Are you implying that that was because the machines were broken, that that was not stolen, and that's why she won by such a narrow margin? Or have I misunderstood?
No. No, I believe that she probably was waxed. She was beaten by probably hundreds and hundreds of thousands of votes. I believe that. What we found out too, they in Arizona in 2020, for example, there's no signature verification. So somebody can mail in a ballot, they can sign it, you or I could sign it. Nobody's checking to make sure that's indeed you. So we don't know who sent these ballots in. Same in 2020, 2022, where we don't know where the ballots came from. And a lot of these are there's no chain of custody. They appeared out of nowhere. It's massive fraud on a massive scale. And I'm telling you, if you were to like read my books and go through these, you'd just be shocked that we are putting up with this in the United States. You know, I've talked to people in Italy, for example. It's all paper ballots, one day election, walk in, make your vote, show your ID, hand in your vote and leave. And it's paper and they know the results that night.
What's just as astonishing to me is that, I mean, I believe in the American people. I really do. I mean, you're very outspoken, all of you, and freedom loving and good people and not as state controlled as we are in Europe. But yet you've had 4 years to put this right, you know, and it doesn't seem as if Trump, although he's winning in the polls or narrowly so, I don't know if he's put things, if all his support, all his supporters have actually managed to do something and what's going to happen in November. We'll talk about that. We're going to go into a quick news break and we'll be back and we'll talk about that then. This is the Pelinier Ross Taylor Show, back after the news.
All right, let's get this underway for our first order of business.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey has announced plans to appeal a court ruling that overturned the state's transgender sports ban to the U.S. Supreme Court. Dr. Anthony Fauci is scheduled to testify publicly before the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic on June 3rd. House Speaker Mike Johnson faced hecklers during a press conference at Columbia University, where he called for the resignation of the university president, Manoush Shafiq, amid ongoing pro-Palestine protests.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Pelinier Ross Taylor Show. We've got Joe Hoft with us, who knows everything about the election steal of 2020. And things are not looking good. But you're going to tell us a little bit about what measures, if any, are going to be put in place to avoid an election steal in 2024.
Yeah, for sure. And these electors in Arizona, you know, it's unbelievable. They believe Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows might be part of it, and maybe even President Trump. So this is an attack. This is what communists and fascists do to their enemy. They persecute them, and that's what's going on. It's massive lawfare. Quite frankly, my brother Jim and I have been sued by a group of people, a bunch of former Obama attorneys from Protect Democracy, Yale Law School, and others, because we reported in Georgia on election night that people were shoving ballots through multiple times. We've got it on video, and we are being sued for defamation of these individuals that we have on video, basically committing crimes, because it's a crime to count a ballot more than once. I believe it's a felony. So anyway,
you're going to win that, aren't you? But yeah, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're going to win that defamation case if you've got video proof. Well, does it distract you?
Well, think about this, though, Pella. We've got maybe 300 attorneys going against us. We got all of Yale Law School. We've got how many attorneys now work at Protect Democracy. That's a name. What it is a bunch of people that worked under Obama that hate Trump and any conservative and are going after us. Now, going back to those numbers, and you talk about the polls, I wrote about this in my first book, and I wrote about it back in 2016 with Hillary Clinton. Polls were showing Hillary ahead of Trump, but we looked at the polls and they were all manufactured. The number, they were polling like 60 Dems to 40 Republicans, and still she was barely winning. And then we started looking at the data, and we could see through social media Trump was way ahead, and sure enough Trump won. In 2020, they destroyed social media for conservatives. They censored us all. We now know that it wasn't just the Democrats that were censoring us. It was the entire U.S. government. They were paying entities to censor good Americans like me and others. I had a guy yesterday that I talked to from Google that said, yes, you were on the list. Gateway Pundit was on that list. Of course we were. And so you can't rely on the polls. They're slanderous. They've been using polls for a long time to try to manipulate people. What we can look at, though, is a couple. One entity, Rasmussen, has given us some polls, and I believe they're pretty accurate. I know the guys that are there. They have a poll from a year ago that says 62% of Americans believe the 2020 election was stolen. 66% believe January 6th was a setup by the feds. A recent poll says that 72% of Americans believe that we're now in a police state. So, and this is all Americans, not just Republicans or Democrats. And I don't agree with some of their polls on Biden. So I can't believe that he's getting any positive results. And but there, this is where they're at on these. So I believe that the American people was maybe two-thirds Trump to Biden. And it proved in Pennsylvania on Election Day. We had 2 million votes for Trump, 1 million for Biden on Election Day. And then over the next 3 days, they manufactured 80% of the mail-in ballots that went to Joe Biden. And we even had a pattern in there. I've worked with a senior-level actuary at a major Fortune 500 company who wanted to remain anonymous, but we saw a pattern in the mail-in ballots across the state. And we can prove that these are anomalies, being an auditor and an executive. You don't see patterns in situations like this. And if there are patterns, there's something wrong. And if there aren't patterns in other situations, and there should be, there's something wrong. And we know that. So there are all sorts of data that were laid out, and we could go through it all.
But just to, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because the polls, even the polls at the moment saying Trump will win in a two-way. And then if it's a three-way with RFK, it's about even. Are you saying... Even the polls showing Trump's winning, he's going to, if the polls were conducted fairly, he would likely win with a much greater margin.
Well, if we had for sure, and if we had free and fair elections, it will be, it'd be a landslide. In 2020, for example, President Trump had 74 million votes. No president, nobody had ever received that many votes. The record was Barack Obama's in 2008 with 69 million. Trump shattered the record, and somehow they're saying Joe Biden, who couldn't get 2,000 people at his rallies between labor for 3 months up to the election and sat in these little circles, somehow he comes up with 81 million votes. It's nonsense. It's so in our face gaslighting. It's sick. And that's the deal. I believe there's statistics that show this. I'm probably 60% now pro Trump. What we've got to do, and your question is for 2020, what do we got to do for 2024? There's a lot of work to be done. We've got to eliminate people off these voter rolls that are imaginary. That's a lot of work. I'm working with a group of people that are doing that. We have to put in place more poll workers and watchers, and we're doing that. There's some training we're working on there. But there's more to do. There's a lot more to do. Ultimately, we need to get rid of the machines. And anybody in Europe, if they ever try to push machines on you of anything, push back. Do not let them, because that's how they're stealing these elections. They're not legit. Things are happening behind the scenes. They're not secure. We know that from a government report from 2020. And so don't ever let them do that to your elections, ever. Stick to paper ballots, day of election, and with voter ID, things we don't have in the U.S. anymore.
Do you think, I mean, if Trump loses, God forbid, this election again, will there be, what's going to happen? I mean, a lot of people are putting their faith in the fact that Trump's going to win the election, and then they'll be absolutely destroyed psychologically if there's another Biden victory. Can America survive this?
I don't know. I don't know. I think, like I've heard people talk about the Civil War back in the 1860s, there was a war brewing for years before 1861 or so when the war broke out. Same thing in the U.S. right now. This is a major issue. We want our freedom. Americans don't want tyranny. We want to be led by good people that and have our voice, that have our voice. And right now we don't have it. We see that with the House's votes and billions more to Ukraine. It's insanity right now. We've got to get this fixed. It's really scary. It's quite frankly, for those that understand what's going on.
And all this lawfare going on against Trump. I mean, in Europe, it's hard to keep track of, and people have already made their minds up. I mean, some of us think, well, he's innocent of everything. And sadly, because of the quality of our mainstream media, most people think he's guilty of everything that's thrown at him. Anyway, Joe, thank you for that brilliant exposition of the position of the situation in America today. It really is dispiriting. We've got you're on the on this week at the Jason Berman show, I guess, and then you've got the website joehoff.com, and you also the Gateway Pundit website, which is excellent. It was excellent on the election steal. I read it every day, and that's why it was so great to be able to talk to you for the first time a few months ago. Right. Anyway, Joe, thank you very much. We're going to have to take a break there and go into our next guest. Thanks a lot. This is the Pelliner and Taylor show.
Thanks a lot.
On TNT on a Thursday afternoon. Thanks, Joe.
Anticipate potential delays for the morning commute. In other news, a recent government report on prescription drug pricing points to corporate mouth.
Freedom of the press is about your right to know.
What are you talking about, man? Look at his stats.
It's about your right to be informed. Your right to access all types of information keeps us free as a nation.
No.
Today, there are real threats to press freedom.
Reaching residential areas by...
And your right to know about the world around us.
Look.
Some threats are obvious, some are easy to miss, but they all put our way of life at risk. We must defend against all of these threats, no matter what kind of news is important to you.
Justified putting American troops in harm's way?
That's a great question.
We must protect our right to know before it's too late. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
What do I love about riding? It's the thrill. The excitement. Riding gives me a sense of freedom. I feel so connected to the road. Riding is like therapy to me. It makes me feel alive. Love riding? Back off.
Deconstructing PSYOPs, propaganda, and mainstream media garbage. Pella Neuroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Well, the woes multiply. Welcome back to the Pella Neuroth-Taylor show for our final guest. We were just talking to Joe Hoft about how the election of 2020 was stolen and it's still not resolved, and how the polls are manipulated, and how this whole Arizona is a sort of... an example of the mess that's taking place everywhere in the United States, probably. We've got then a number of kind of lawfare cases against Trump. People's minds have already been made up, I guess, whether in Europe or the United States. Some people think he's guilty of everything, and it's a miracle he hasn't been put in jail yet. Other thinks this is an accumulation of false cases designed to put a rival who is very likely to win a fair election if he's allowed to stand. We got to Gerard Felites to talk to us about that. He's a senior counsel at the Lawfare Project, an international nonprofit legal think tank and litigation fund based in New York City. He has an expertise in public policy, national security law and policy, counterterrorism, international law, civil and human rights, and economics. He's appeared often on Newsmax, i24 News, and other programs, and has been quoted as an expert on many media outlets. In recent years, he's pursued civil counterterrorism litigation with emphasis on money laundering investigations and sanctions violations, and represents the victims of international acts of terrorism. Welcome to the show, Gerard.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I mean, your very project is called the Lawfare Project, so it seems very appropriate to talk to you as somebody who can perhaps spot the lawfare game that seems to be going on against Trump. What is really going on here? Here in Europe, we just get this deluge of stories which are written by mainstream media that's very anti-Trump, so you can't really trust what they say. But we're trusting you to say, give us a more nuanced picture of that. What's going on?
Well, the nuanced picture is that a lot of the criminal charges that are being brought about against Trump have very little merit, have been untried, untested, and are very sketchy. And the cumulative effect is, what is lawfare? It is using the legal system as an impediment to make it difficult, if not impossible, for him to run for and be elected as president, because he's expending time and assets, money, to deal with these lawsuits. Right now, he's spending 4 days a week of Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, which just Wednesday off, in a courtroom in New York City to fight what were essentially misdemeanor charges outside the statute of limitations. And that's time he's not spending on the campaign trail. That's money he's not spending campaigning. And it's a distraction. This is how you use or abuse the legal system against your adversaries. Make it expensive and time consuming for them to defend themselves, and you get away with murder.
So I'm just, there are like 34 charges against him, but isn't that kind of fiddling the as well, because it wasn't really 34 cases of misdemeanors. It was 34 instances. I mean, just give us a, isn't that like stacking the books against Trump unfairly? Just unpack that a little bit for us.
Essentially, it's 34 documents. It's the number of documents that are alleged to have been falsely submitted or signed that wrongly account for the transactions that took place. And now let's get to the heart of it. Donald Trump paid money in what is essentially a settlement agreement with someone to have a non-disclosure agreement. All of that is perfectly legal. He gave money to his lawyer to make that happen. Again, perfectly legal. What the New York District Attorney is taking issue with is how that money was recorded in corporate books. And from that, which may have been a misdemeanor if they were recorded erroneously. But again, you need to show some kind of an intent to do something wrong, which arguably there wasn't any. He was doing everything legitimately, paying money as he's authorized to do, giving money to his lawyer like he's allowed to do. And the fact that they were recorded wrong, according to the New York District Attorney, brings these charges as a felony that he was somehow engaged in campaign violations, for which he should be sent to jail.
So, what are the previous instances of people doing this sort of thing? Because non-disclosure agreements are probably are really standard in the United States, aren't they? So, what would an enemy of Trump's, an honest enemy of Trump, say he was doing wrong? That he was, because paying off a woman he'd slept with is, you know, I mean, not the most beautiful moral thing in the world, but I mean, it's been done before. So, you know, why I just don't understand. If he was doing a misdemeanor, guilty of a misdemeanor, where would he, what sort of sentence could he have expected in the worst case scenario?
Worst case scenario was he'd pay a fine. I mean, misdemeanors can be crimes that can be punished with up to a year in jail, but that almost never happens with corporate documents. So really, it's a slap on the wrist.
So how did felony, and how did they turn it into a campaign violation in the accusations?
Well, because the argument is that Donald Trump didn't pay that money because he wanted to keep this private for the sake of his family or for his personal reputation. He did it because he wanted to be president, and he was afraid that if these revelations were made public, people would not vote for him. Now, look at John Edwards. He went through the same thing when he was, he ran for vice president a number of years earlier. Mm. He had something very similar, and he was brought up on charges, and he was acquitted ultimately because what was concluded was he did it to save his marriage, not because he wanted to be a vice president or an elected official. So we already have precedent for this. And let's also point out that candidates are far from perfect. Look at Bill Clinton and everyone since. Everyone has peccadilloes, but bringing in felony charges for paying someone for a non-disclosure agreement, that's pretty unique and it's very aggressive.
Yeah. What about the case in Washington, D.C. then, which is totally separate but just happens to be on at the same time? And how serious is that?
The case in Washington, D.C., all of this is premised on, there are two countervailing arguments. Donald Trump's position is that everything that he did after the election was to maintain the integrity of the election. As president, he needed to make sure that the voting was accurate, that the right person had won, that there were no irregularities, and he was exercising his powers as president and his First Amendment right to speak out against what he saw was an injustice. Now, the prosecutors are looking at this, the federal prosecutor, special counsel is looking at this and saying, no, that was not what you were allowed to do. You really did this because you wanted to steal the election. So they're starting from a conclusion that what he had done was wrong and basing criminal charges off of that.
Because presumably if the election was stolen, then he's not stealing the election. He's just saying the truth as it is. But of course, that narrative, I mean, as the last guest I spoke to, two-thirds of Americans seem to think the election was stolen and that there were feds on the ground that day. And so what we've got here is a kind of a political elite in America that seems completely out of touch with the general public's will. Would you say that's true?
What I think we have is a political elite that wants to subvert the will of the people, that wants to criminalize things that until now were reasonable inquiry, where when you have a disagreement about something up until recent years, you could air those grievances, you can discuss it, you can debate it. But now we have a political elite that wants to stifle debate, that wants to stifle discussion, that wants just their view to prevail. We don't just see that on election. We see that on social issues as well, whether it's gender issues or parental rights or abortion even. You have a political elite that's intolerant, that's gotten to the point of intolerancy, that they're using the legal system to quash dissenting discussion. And that's really what the danger is. If you can do this to Donald Trump, a former president, a billionaire, a popular figure, then everyone, it can happen to anyone.
Well, that's part of his election shtick, isn't it? That he's saying they're not after me, they're after you. And so he's posing himself as a kind of martyr and protector. But do you think that there is a danger if Trump is going to, if the election, I'm not convinced. What I'm very impressed by is from this side of the pond, having talked to guests over the last few months, is the case that the election was stolen and that the smart, very clever American people are very aware of this, people on the right giving very good arguments. But I sort of associate the Americans being an action-oriented people, and I haven't seen any practical measures to try and reduce the fact, the possibility that the election will be stolen in 2024, because what's going to happen? What's going to happen? They're going to try it all over again, aren't they? And is there going to be a United States after 6th of November or whatever? You know, how are you going to come together? What's going to happen?
That's the million-dollar question. But, you know, we have to look at our history and see that we have had so much civil instability in the past as well, whether it was during the Civil Rights Movement, the Vietnam War, the lead-up to World War II, even the lead-up to World War I, Civil War. I mean, we've had very divisive periods of history, and somehow we've managed to come together afterwards. I agree with you, though. I mean, there is nothing proactive being done. There have been no fundamental changes to laws or policies or procedures in many states. So effectively, we are in the same place today that we were in 2020, and there is no more guarantee that the election will be more transparent or people will believe that the results are accurate today than there was in 2020.
I know. I wonder what the psychology is going to be among the MAGA movement, because, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. You know, you've been on notice for 4 years that this is going to happen again. I mean, the humiliation of it happening again and not doing anything about it. I mean, there are people living for this moment and who've watching TNT and the Gateway Pundit and even Fox News in some respects. And obviously the message has got through, even though the Washington Post will never report it, that, you know, bad things are afoot. And not to do anything, it's incredible. I mean, people ought to be out with pitchforks. And of course, a lot of us in Europe regard America as a, if it happened, partly because you are the hegemon, just as the Soviet revolutions happened in the Soviet Union before they could happen in the satellite states. But I think partly because of the nature of Americans, we associate you with being a freedom-loving people, you know. And we lose hope for sort of subverting our own globalist governments. There's a European election happening in June, and there's not much going to be changed there. So a lot of us are looking to Trump. And you have to ask questions about his executive ability, because he's also sold himself as a man of action. But if he can't even turn around this massive injustice done to him and is just accepting it like some kind of Soviet gulag victim, you know, or something, just sitting there. I feel sorry for him, of course, because he's been an immensely strong man. But going into these transparently false cases one after the other, he's got all these hungry sort of attorneys after him, half his age, and he does look a bit more worn out, doesn't he? And the slogans, We're used to those punchy slogans. He was kind of the Sex Pistols of politicians, saying forbidden things, wasn't he? You know, fake news and lock her up. And we all laughed at that. It was funny and it was serious at the same time and telling the truth. And now he looks rather tired in his court appearances, and we don't associate him with any catchy slogans. So that's just a view from this side of the pond. Just back to this Edwards case, I know nothing about law, but couldn't Trump cite the Edwards case in his favor?
Well, it's not precedent. I mean, it happened in a different jurisdiction, so it's not precedent.
Right, so that's okay.
It's citing Spanish law in a German case, but it does have merit because it's the same argument. Trump has to make the same argument, and he is. Eventually, he will be making the argument that, first of all, he did nothing wrong. But even if he did, it wasn't because he was doing it to get a benefit in the election, but because you know, he has a young son who was at that point entering high school. He has a wife that he doesn't want to embarrass. He was doing it for personal reasons, and that makes it not illegal because it has nothing to do with the campaign.
And anyway, it's beyond the statute of limitations. So the whole point is moot, is it not?
You're taking acts that were beyond the statute of limitations. And the only way you're turning it into a crime is by making that claim that it has to do with campaign finance, which is quite a stretch. So if that argument falls, then these are not crimes. They're past the statute. These are misdemeanors that can't even be heard.
Right. Okay. Maybe we can just pivot a little bit to this Ukraine bill, which doesn't have any money. Again, a lot of us thought that Trump was going to resist this to the last because he's made two things we do associate with him. Is the first, he's going to bring peace to Ukraine on the first day of his office. And the second is he's going to control the American border. And none of this bill doesn't. Mike Johnson was an ally of his. And they seem to, from this perspective, to have caved in. And there's no money for the border in this spending bill, but a lot of money for Ukraine. And then there's this Pfizer warrant, which is going to expand surveillance. And then there's possibility that America or Biden give a presidential executive power to confiscate huge numbers of huge sums of Russian assets, which could have a sort of a negative effect on the credibility of the dollar. I mean, a lot of clever people have spoken out against it. What are your thoughts on this apparent sort of caving in of Trump and Mike Johnson on the Ukraine spending bill and other measures that are being pushed through right now?
I have a slightly nuanced perspective, having grown up in the Cold War and knowing the dangers of unchecked Soviet or Russian aggression. I do think it's important for American foreign policy to address it. Now, whether it's the unbridled and uncontrolled support of Ukraine is the right way to do it, I'm not an expert on that, but I do think it's important to counter Russian aggression. So to the extent that Donald Trump himself realizes that sometimes you do need to be unpredictable, that's why the Russians fear him in a way, is because he doesn't toe the party line. Here, it's perhaps surprising to some, but not that shocking, that he would say, okay, you know what, maybe this is something that we want to support, because ultimately half of the money going to Ukraine is coming right back to American companies that are manufacturing the weapons. They're selling these arms. So it's not really that bad for America, and it does serve an important purpose of keeping Russia in check. Now, Biden, an executive order or an action to freeze Russian assets or to seize Russian assets, that's a little more dangerous. You see Biden doing something similar in Israel, where he passed an executive order to effectively declare Jews living in their homeland as terrorist organizations and seize their assets or put them on sanctions list. That's more dangerous. This is more dangerous from an economics perspective, because it does affect the value of the dollar, and it also affects the monetization. Countries will be less likely to use the dollar as an asset, to hold things, to hold dollar reserves, and to use dollars as a currency when the U.S. government, because all dollar transactions go through New York, can just seize assets or control that. So it risks the U.S. dollar losing its prevalence as the major currency of the world. And that means that it will be devalued, and we will also see more inflation, both in the U.S. and globally.
And what about this Pfizer legislation that seems to expand the surveillance state? Because again, this is something that Trump was sort of he appeals to libertarians, because at least there's some hope that he's more open to dialing this down. But tell us what the bad things about this legislation are.
Well, I'll give you the nuanced view here as well. The good thing about this is that it does serve our national security interests. FISA allows the U.S. government to intercept communications happening with bad people or people on a watch list in foreign countries, even when that communication involves people here in the U.S. Now, that's a good thing, because we want to know if someone is calling up the next Osama bin Laden and planning a terrorist attack. We for sure want to know that. What's dangerous about FISA is that it gives the FBI and other intelligence agencies too much power to look into Americans without obtaining a warrant. That's an abuse that was used against Donald Trump himself and against other Americans. So we do need that check. There does need to be a warrant. There does need to be better safeguards in place. And the FISA reauthorization that took place doesn't have those safeguards. It just reauthorizes it. So it's kind of like giving the intelligence community what they want, but without giving us the checks to maintain our constitutional rights.
Okay. Incredibly interesting. I love the way you summarized all these complex issues in a way that's quite easy to remember and summarize to third party. People ask you to, I would say, tell it so that you can tell to other people you've heard, and tell it like a discussion in the pub. Gerald, how can we find your stuff, and where will we go to find out your essays and opinions about things and your Lawfare project? We've got about 30 seconds.
For the Lawfare Project, it's on the internet at thelawfareproject.org or on social media at the Lawfare Project. And for me, I'm only on Twitter, and that's at Gerard Felitti, where people can just Google and find the latest things I've been saying and causing a ruckus about.
Good. Okay, Gerard Felitti, F-I-L-I-T-T-I. Thank you very much, Gerard. Love to have you on again. Really interesting. This is the Pelaneros Taylor Show on TNT News Talk. This is Thursday afternoon, and we are wrapped up for today. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Gerald.